A Face Only a Mother or an A-10 Pilot Could Love. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. As we reported a few days ago, the U.S. Air Force is planning to retire some of its longest-serving F-15s, F-16s, and A-10 Thunderbolt 2s in an effort to save about $3.5 billion. This is at least the third time A-10s have been targeted for sunny retirement at Monthan. And every time up till now, the plane demonstrates why, in certain situations, there's nothing close to it for effectiveness, and it manages to stick around. Last year at Oshkosh, I got to talk with Major Paul Brown of the A-10 West demo team about the plane they call the Warthog, starting with what's special about it and why he loves to fly it.
The airplane's special is because it was built around the gun. You know, it was built sole-purpose airplane for close air support, and it does close air support better than any airplane in the world, and that's why it's awesome.
Now, I think that maybe the first time a lot of people who are around and interested in aircraft now got to see the A-10 in action was probably the Desert Storm years. If I understand it correctly, the A-10 was kind of in mothballs or had plans to be at that point.
Well, there's a number of times where the Air Force has looked at it for force restructuring, some cost-cutting measures, and they've talked about getting rid of the airplane, and every time we do, we seem to end up in a scrap where we need it, and it proves its value over and over, and now we're going to be around until 2028, so it'll be one of the oldest fighters ever.
All right, now, why is that? Why can't they make, why have they not advanced something beyond what the A-10 can do in its particular mission?
What's beautiful about the A-10 is simplicity, okay? And you can have all the bells and whistles and GPS-guided bombs and all of that, but when everything goes bad and the guys are yelling on the ground, the still most invaluable thing is a flexible weapon, like the gun, and a good set of eyeballs to look on the ground and say, those are good guys, these are bad guys, and to be able to go in there and do that precisely. We use this gun like a surgeon would use a scalpel. It's that precise.
Now, using that gun is an amazing thing to watch. I mean, obviously, we don't fire any live rounds at air shows, but what are the particular attributes of that particular weapon that nothing else does well?
Well, we got 1,179 rounds, okay? So we shoot about 100 rounds per burst. So per airplane, we've got 11 bursts out there, and each one of those we would target for a tank. So for instance, if I hit all my targets, I'd be able to take out 11 tanks with just my gun alone. And we don't ever fly alone, so we're either in two or four ships. So you get a four-ship A-10 out there, and it's 44 armored vehicles you can take out with one four-ship. And it's just incredible. It's reliable, it works all the time, and it's easy. I can teach a six-year-old to do it. It's like a Nintendo game.
What kind of rounds do you shoot? I've seen, I think, mostly alternating shells and incendiaries or some odd mixture. Is that chosen to match a particular mission, or is there a particular configuration you fly it all the time?
Well, you're talking about a combat mix or party mix, as we call it, and that's a 5-to-1 ratio of 5 armor piercing to 1 high explosive incendiary, just to ignite petroleum products on fire if they were spilled out of the tanks or whatnot. But those are for a very Cold War theater. Those are us going against the Russians, and we're changing a lot of that. You know, the depleted uranium round's not, it has some after effects, and it is slightly radioactive, and so there's some environmental issues there, and we don't use those rounds unless we absolutely have to. In Iraq and Afghanistan, we're flying with high-explosive incendiary rounds, and those are just, they're great against soft skins, like non-armored tanks and stuff like that. They're using a lot of Jeeps, Toyota trucks, you know, mud hut houses, aluminum buildings and stuff, and they work very effectively there. But in training, we shoot just simple lead ball ammo, just like you'd buy to go shoot with your 45 or anything like that. That's all it is.
All right, now the A-10 is kind of an oddity at an air show, and I think maybe one reason it draws attention, other than its unique look, is the fact that it is very maneuverable, but it's also quiet. Is that a tactical advantage?
It is a tactical advantage, and these engines, they're turbofans, high-bypass turbofans, just like you'd see in an airliner. They are incredibly fuel-efficient. They don't have as much thrust as some of the modern jets do, but they are quiet, and that is a tactical advantage. Above 20,000 feet, guys can't hear us on the ground, so we're able to loiter and provide a lot of protection for special forces teams without giving up the element of surprise.
Now, I have heard that this is a very survivable plane in battle conditions. What makes it that way?
Armor. It's 1 of every 4 pounds on the airplane is armor. So this airplane right here weighs about 40,000 pounds. So 10,000 pounds of its armor. And you think the whole mission of an airplane is to keep it as light as you can so you can haul load. And there's no other design out there that carries that much armor. I mean, it protects me, my whole ejection seat. I mean, it's an unbelievably survivable airplane, and they built it to be as survivable as possible and as lethal as possible, and Republic did a great job.
All right, now, how does it carry that much weight around and still look as maneuverable as it is?
Well, it's got a big, fat, straight wing, and you know, we're limited, just like World War II airplanes were. You know, it couldn't go supersonic because they had flat-bottom wings. They didn't have laminar flow wings till the Mustang came around. And this is a flat-bottom wing. So we're limited to 0.75 Mach because parts of the airplane start to go supersonic, and it's a very subsonic airplane with straight wings. But that straight wing is what makes it maneuverable. And the people love us at shows because we never leave their field of view. We stay within their 10 to 2 o'clock the whole entire time, and people like it because it's like watching one of the aerobatic airplanes out here. It's a jet-powered Stearman, that's what I tell people. It's not Jimmy Franklin's, not quite as cool, but it's a jet-powered Stearman with a big gun.
You've obviously probably flown other planes. Is there any particular quirk this airplane has that takes some getting used to?
The only one that I found weird was that it has buffet post-stall. So you have no physical indications that are built in with the wing, with twist or anything, to tell you when the wing's going to stall. So to counteract that, we have an oral tone that goes in our ear. And McDonnell Douglas did this for years with units of AOA, but it's based on angle of attack, and you get a single beep when you're not quite at the stall, and then you get a double rate beep the whole time you're flying when you're right on the edge. And so it talks to you, and then if you continue to pull past that double rate, then you're getting into the buffeting, and you're already in the stall at that point.
So does it make it tougher to learn? What do you fly to train in before you get assigned to the A-10 group?
That is the beauty of the airplane. The only people that have ever flown the A-10 are hog drivers and a few test pilot guys that we let through the course because we have to. But no, there's no trainer for this. You know, we've got simulators, and guys go through there, and they're in class for about 2 weeks, and they do five simulators. We take them out, and we start the jet. And then I'm an instructor that teaches students, and we chase them out there. So I taxi out there and get the kid on the runway and get clearance for takeoff and have him run it up, and You can see him shaking there in the cockpit, and tell him release brakes when he's ready. So it's all on their own.
In a moment, if the Warthog is seen by some as ugly, why did they make it look that way? I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits. That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is general aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Platt. Our feature today is a conversation with U.S. Air Force Major Paul Brown of the A-10 West Demo Team. And we're talking about the plane's unusual looks. Granted, you don't expect aesthetics to be a priority in a design like this, but why did they stick the engines in big external nacelles like that?
The engines are where they are. Part going back to survivability, it was a design consideration. They wanted them out of the fuselage because if one of them takes a round, okay, and it starts burning, a lot of the other conventional airplanes, an F-15 and F-16, their engines are internally. So if they get a fire inside there, guess what's burning? Their airplane. So if one of our engines gets hit and it catches on fire, it's external. It's a titanium firewall. It can burn and fall off the airplane. It's totally separated. You can isolate those systems. So no, it's a good seat. It's the same one the F-16s use. And you know, both my brothers fly F-16, so I can say this. Well, they don't call them lawn darts for a reason. That's all joke aside. But they have one engine, and they occasionally lose them. And so same seat, they use them all the time. It makes us hog drivers feel good because they make it out all the time.
All right, Major, you've brought up hog drivers. Tell us about the official name and the less official name of this aircraft and where they come from.
The original name was the Thunderbolt II, and that harks back rather to World War II when the P-47 was around, the Thunderbolt. And it was a fantastic air-to-ground airplane and air-to-air, but it was known for its air-to-ground ruggedness. It would come back with holes all over it. The P-47 was an air-cooled engine, where the Mustang was obviously liquid-cooled, and one bullet in the wrong place would bring down a Mustang in a radiator or a coolant line. Well, that's the same thing with this. You know, we kid that the F-16 is a modern-day Mustang, where it's sleek and fast and light and really goes, but one bullet in the wrong place can bring that airplane down, where we're the modern-day P-47. We can come back with holes all over the place, and it just keeps on trucking. So Thunderbolt and Thunderbolt II, and that's how the name originated.
What about the Warthog?
It's so ugly. You know, it's a god-awful ugly airplane. It really is, unless you fly it, and then it's the most beautiful thing in the world, aside from the guys that have had their lives saved from, you know, on the ground, and they think it is the prettiest woman ever. It's just a wonderful airplane. They say it's looks only a mother could love, and we love it. It's just a fantastic airplane.
There are a lot of American mothers who love this airplane for what it did for their sons. Well, tell us about flying it, getting to fly it, and about your career in the Air Force. How did you decide to do this, and what would you say to people who are thinking about the same thing?
Oh, wow. That's a long road. I decided I wanted to be a fighter pilot when I was 8, and I come from a whole family of pilots. My mom's a United Airlines pilot. My dad's a mechanic. He taught her to fly. Both my grandparents are pilots. We lived on an airport community. So I wanted to go to the Air Force Academy, and I worked hard and struggled through that and went on to pilot training. And the fighters were really slimming down whenever I went into pilot training. So there was 34 in my class, and two of us got fighters. There was an F-16 and an A-10. I had about 1,000 hours of flight time when I got there, and I did well. I would leap ahead every phase, but then my buddies with no flight time would just be nipping at my heels, you know, 7-8 rides in the program. And I got beat out. I got beat out by one of my best friends, and I graduated number 2, and he got the F-16, and I ended up with the Hog, and neither one of us would trade it for anything, you know. A lot of people say your favorite fighter is the one you're in, and it's just wonderful. And I can go on and on about flying in Afghanistan, but it's just a wonderful airplane.
Heritage flights. Now, these flights have been becoming more and more popular at air shows over the last 10 years or so. And I got to tell you, just hearing how it's described on paper didn't impress me that much, but to actually see one of these things chokes me up, and I've never been in the Air Force. How did these things originate, and what's it like to try to synchronize a more modern jet with a World War II vintage aircraft?
Well, it started about 11 years ago, and it was done to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Air Force in 1997. And they did it one time, and it was such a hit that they kept on doing it. There were some of the original founders were astronauts and other really big names in the aviation industry. They've been able to keep it going. It's a wonderful program. It is by far and large the highlight of my aviation career thus far, and that's all I've been doing my whole entire life, and it's just unbelievable, and it's really difficult. We can go into the technical aspects of it, but like you said, the biggest thing I hear from people all the time is that it chokes them up, and that's the number one reaction.
What's it like from the flying side? I mean, you know, you're paired up with some machines where obviously they're about at the upper end of their range, and you're about at stall speed. What does it take to work that out?
It is incredibly difficult. You know, the routine normally goes is I go fly my 14-minute aerobatic routine. I'm done, and then I go rejoin with the Heritage flight. So I'm in there just slamming the stick around. It's 7.5 Gs at every pull. It's just gnarly and wild and in there and just brutal. And then I've got to rejoin with these priceless warbirds, and it goes to fingertip flying. And it's incredibly difficult because of the differences in weight and wing loading and speeds and drag curves. You know, a bump that will move a Mustang 6 feet will move me 3 inches. And so especially like today, we're doing a four-ship. We've got a P-38 in the lead, one of 6 flying in the world, an F-86, a P-51, and then me in the slot. So all these different weights and wing loadings, and we're bumping all over the place. And I'm glad it looks good from the ground because it sometimes looks like chaos up there, but we're working hard.
Well, I want to thank you personally for bringing these planes. I say these planes because you bring a spare with you. And we'll get into those stories maybe another time. But it's going to be fun watching you fly, and thanks for sharing your love for this plane with us.
All right. Well, I'm happy to be here. Thank you guys for doing the interview on behalf of the A-10 West demonstration team and the Heritage Flight. Thank you for coming out to Oshkosh.
Back on March 25th, the U.S. Air Force conducted its first ever test flight powered exclusively by biofuel without a partial petroleum component, and they used an A-10 for the test. Hopefully for those who've become attached to the Warthog, they'll keep finding reasons to keep it around. Major Paul Brown participated in a Heritage flight at Oshkosh immediately after talking with me last year. and there was nothing ugly about it. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.